Captain Frank Mummer with the Maryland School of Sailing and Seamanship. In this episode of our podcast, Captain Tom Tersey and I discuss a process for evaluating the possibility of problems occurring offshore and a way of rating the probability and the dangerousness in order to come up with a way of prioritizing which ones you're going to work on before you get underway. If you're interested, a paper copy of the spreadsheet that Captain Tom discusses is available at our website, www.mdschool. Through our school store, it's item number 64 in that school store list. Let's go take a listen.
Right. Well, according to Tom's clock, it's right around 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock.
And you see, I've come back from Bermuda.
You must have come back from Bermuda, or we all went to Bermuda with you. Either way, it's good.
Yeah.
And we've got almost 50 participants in, so we're going to get started here. I'd like to welcome everybody to tonight's Tuesday night chat. Tonight, we're going to be discussing how to evaluate potential problems and how to mitigate them, decide to mitigate them. And this is something that Tom has got a great YouTube video on, but we're going to start with him tonight. And Tom, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Frank. I appreciate it. Hello, everybody. I'm glad you can attend this. And the title of this really is Offshore Emergencies. And emergencies offshore come in all different shapes and sizes and levels of seriousness. Some are just minor issues that irritate you, but some are very serious issues, like somebody falls overboard. And you have to understand that there's going to be a process long before you go offshore of evaluating those potential emergencies and doing something about it in advance, because once you're offshore 800 miles from land, you can't run down to the Chandlery and pick up the part that you may need. So think about it this way. You're planning to go next year transatlantic, and you have the boat, you have a good sail inventory of all different levels of sails that you'll need. Your engine has been well tuned up. It runs well. You have a good tankage for your diesel and for your water. And you have a good waste system. And you have a generator. You have a water maker. You have everything. These are all the positives that you have planned for probably a couple of years. And you've got everything in order. What I'd like to talk about now, though, are the negatives. What are the things that might go wrong on your transatlantic cruise? And if these things do go wrong, what are you going to do about it when you are 800 miles offshore? Do you have a plan for that? Have you thought about it in advance? Do you have the tools, the instruction books, various other things that you need to deal with that particular emergency? So what I suggest you do with the remaining time that you have before you depart, so you have to play the what-if game. What if this goes wrong? What if my engine won't run anymore? What if I don't have any electrical power? What if somebody goes overboard? What if I break a shroud on the mast? What if the mast comes down? You know, various things. So what I suggest that you do is think about these things long and hard. Read books, look at videos, talk to people who have sailed offshore. Get as much input as you can about problems that people have had and the things they have done to deal with those problems. And compile a list. You know, there's no item that should not go on the list. If you think of it, especially if it keeps you awake at 2 a.m., that's our 2 a.m. rule. If it keeps you awake at 2 a.m., you put it on your list, if for no other reason, so you can go to sleep at 2 a.m. So you compile your list, and you might come up with 50 or 100 items of all shapes and sizes, as I say. And take that list, and then what we want to do is evaluate the items on that list in terms of what is the probability that that problem may occur. And then if it does occur, what is the level of seriousness to the boat, to the crew, to the safety of everyone on board, to your ability to continue operating the boat and get to where you're going? And so I've done this myself years ago, and I want to show you the process that I went through for evaluation of these potential problems. So first, I'm going to show you if I can figure out, and I lose this every time, if I can figure out how to switch screens. So I'm going to go here and here, and I'm going to say share. And Frank, you see my
Yep,
spreadsheet?
you've got it. It's up.
Okay, great. So the first thing I want to do is basically show you the list of items that I came up with. And you may adopt some of these items, you may not adopt them, you may come up with a whole list of your own. But basically, here it is in alphabetical order: abandoned ship, batteries dead, battery charger inoperative, and the list goes on. Okay, I'm not going to read through every one of these, but I want you to simply see the kind of things that I have on that here. Pirate threat, running rigging failure, seacock failure, seawater intake clog, water in my fuel, water tanks contaminated, winch is inoperative. So these are the things that I came up with, a lightning strike, and that's, I got hit by lightning a couple of years ago, and it's no fun. Blew out everything, absolutely everything on the boat except the engine. Freshwater pump inoperative. Food locker empty. I've run out of food. I've got flooding going on. Fishnet entanglement. There are fishnets out there that get adrift. Capsized brooch. Bilge pump inoperative. So you see the kinds of things that I have on this list. So what I did then as a next step is I assigned some numbers to them in terms of the probability that these things may occur. Now, these are my guesses as to what is the probability of occurrence. I rated them on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the least likely and 10 being very, very likely to occur. And I've gone down this list and assigned these numbers. Abandoned ship. I say, well, likelihood that we'll have to abandon ship is very, very low. But then here's another one I have, which right here, crew member seasick. That's very likely. Most trips I do offshore water, somebody's seasick on board. Pirate threat. Well, that's pretty low likelihood, but there was a time when we worried about that quite a bit. Sail torn or jammed. I got a six on that. Here's storm approaching. Very likely to have a storm approaching, more than 50%. So I've gone through and using my judgment based on my experience, discussions with other people, just my own intuition, knowing the boat equipment, knowing the weak points in my boat. I know the areas that have given me trouble sailing at coastal. And what are the things, how does that lead me as far as judging probabilities on these things? So those are the probabilities that I guessed at. And I will admit these are guesses because I don't know the answer to this. So then what I did is I said, okay, if one of these issues does occur, what is the seriousness of it? And I say abandoned ship. Well, the serious is a 10. It's top number That's about the worst condition that can happen to us. A capsized brooch. I put a nine on that. A crew member overboard. It's a high seriousness, but it's a low probability. Okay. I didn't give it a probability of one. I gave it a two, but I say if it does occur, it's a very serious issue, especially if it occurs in strong wind conditions where there's a lot of wave action. If it occurs at nighttime, just so many things that can make it very, very difficult for us to recover a crew member lost overboard, especially if someone did not see them go overboard, and it might have been an hour ago that they went. Then, how about fire? What's the likelihood of fire occurring? Well, the likelihood is low in my way of judging it, but the seriousness is very high. A fire on a fiberglass boat, if not put under control very, very quickly, can pretty soon turn that boat into a little pile of rubble. Lightning strike, low probability, but very high seriousness, can blow everything out. Mast is broken, blow everything out. Here's potable water expended. A three likelihood is my judgment, and a nine seriousness is my judgment on that. So what I did then was I took these numbers in these two columns and multiplied the first column by the second column and got a third column. Okay. And that allowed me to rank, hold on, that allowed me to rank these in terms of the level. In terms of level of seriousness that I'm concerned with. So I did this arithmetic, and 1 times 10 is 10, and battery charger inoperative, 3 times 4 is 12, and it went down the list. Okay, and I have my level of concern. And I then took this and I sorted it. Data, sort on level of concern from largest, smallest. I say, okay, there I've sorted my list now in terms of level of concern. And let's look down the list now. Here's my top 10 or so. Steering inoperative, I judged it to be the most serious issue that can occur because steering inoperative is going to render the boat uncontrollable, and therefore a very high likelihood of the boat being swamped and sunk because you're not able to control the boat properly in ocean conditions. If the wind comes up and we start having 6 to 8 or 10 foot waves, and I'm forced into a broach position, or even forces me to run off because I'm not able to steer the boat, I think that's very serious. Potable water expended, I put that as being a very high seriousness also because our survival, 500, 600, 700, 800 miles from land, is we need water. And potable water is expended, and maybe my water maker's not working if I have one. Crew member overboard, very serious again, as far as level of concern. So I went through this whole list and rated it this way, and you can see then in order the way I rated these emergencies. But what this does for me now is that it gives me a point of focus. What are the items a year in advance of my trip that I want to spend my effort on in dealing with the negatives that might occur offshore? Now, my list may not be the perfect list, and it may be that none of these things actually happened to me. But if I do want to prepare the boat and the crew for the negatives that may occur, then I have a list that I'm going to work from. I'm going to say, okay, let's say talk about steering and operative. And if I have that, first thing I want to do is go through and inspect my boat steering system very thoroughly and understand how it's arranged. Is it a rack and pinion steering system? Is it cable steering? Is it hydraulic? Is it pneumatic? How is the steering system constructed? And what are the weak points in it? What if I have a cable system? Well, what are some of the problems that may occur in a cable system? I'm going to shut this off now, and because I'm not going to use it anymore, but I want to just talk about the steering inoperative as a case study for a moment here. So suppose discussion of manual steering inoperative. So one of the first things is, what are the if you lose your steering, what are some of the immediate emergency issues you have to deal with? Well, before you went offshore, you went and studied your steering system, and you know a little bit more about, you know a lot more about it when you're actually sailing. But what are the immediate emergency issues if it does happen? Is the steering loose or jammed? Is the autopilot functional? Are there collision hazards nearby? Are there dangerous wave actions occurring? Are there strong winds? Do you know how to steer with sail trim? Will you be dropping your sails? Going to start the engine? Going to heave to? What are you going to do as far as immediate action if you lose your steering? Do you have an emergency tiller of any kind? So that's just some of the initial considerations that you might deal with.
Tom,
Yeah.
I'll break in here just a minute. You're still sharing your screen. Do you mean to be sharing the screen, or do you want to go back to the big pictures?
I want to share my screen.
Okay.
Okay, is that all right?
That's perfectly fine.
Okay. So if manual steering is an operative, what are the emergency, interim emergency steering issues you might be dealing with? Emergency tiller if rudder is functional. But what if the rudder has jammed against the hull because you hit a log? Do you have a big oar? Can you jury rig something? I've heard of people jury rigging a big oar on a using a whisker pole and a door lashed to the whisker pole and dragged in the water and use it as a big long oar. You have a drogue. Can you use a drogue on port and starboard winches like this? Will that give you any benefit in steering? Difficult to steer, but maybe better than no steering. Here are some rudder configurations you have to think about. Here's the simplest one: a tiller, and the rudder post has external straps holding the rudder blade to the post. You can get at these. You can see if there's corrosion in those rudder posts. You can have this where you have internal flags on the rudder post, and you cannot see whether there's corrosion occurring and whether these flags might break off and you lose control of the rudder. You have this configuration where it's externally mounted to the aft end of the.
Hey Tom,
Yes, sir.
I hate to break in again, but we're still seeing the spreadsheet.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That's
Thank you.
it. Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you what. So you're still seeing the spreadsheet. Why would you not be seeing this? So
That's a good question.
let me go back here because I guess I had to. All right, I'm going to then go to stop share. I'm going to go to stop share and just talk. Okay.
Okay.
So in any event, so one of the issues that we're dealing with here now then is what is the configuration of your rudder? Do you know that configuration? And have you ever replaced the rudder blade? Do you know whether you've got any corrosion in there? Do you have an ability to repair it if you do? So one of the best ways long in advance is if you don't know the configuration of your your rudder attachments is to be serious about taking that rudder out of the boat and maybe getting a new rudder, new rudder pose, maybe opening up the rudder and looking at those attachments where they might be corroded. But basically the process that I'm talking about is long in advance of your going offshore, look at your equipment, for example, in this case, the steering system. If it is a cable steering system, a lot of times it happens in cable steering systems is the cable becomes loose for a couple of reasons. One, the turnbuckles might loosen up and slack the cable, and then the cable jumps off the pulleys. Another reason is that the attachment of the pulley supports to the hull become weak and start tearing away from the hull, and going to loosen up the cable, and the same thing will happen. You'll lose the steering because the cable jumps off the pulleys. So another item to look at is in hydraulic steering. Do you have spare parts for the hydraulics? How are the hoses, the hydraulic hoses? Are they old? Are they beat up? Are they ratty? Maybe you want to, in advance, just replace all the hydraulic steering hoses. What about the reservoir and the hydraulic pump and so forth? Looking at all of that, the similar things would go for toward pneumatics. So basically, my message is compile your list. Give it some evaluation as far as its level of probability of occurring. That's a guess. And its seriousness if it does occur, and rate your list, and now start dealing with the top items in that list. You may, if you compiled 100 different items, you may never get through that list before it's time for you to depart. But maybe you're going to get through 20 or 30 of them and do some serious preparations. Let's say, again, in the hydraulic steering system, do you have the tech manuals for that? Do you know how to make adjustments and so forth, even if you have everything intact? You have spare hydraulic fluid and many, many, many others. So you have to look at each component that you're dealing with and decide whether or not you need something additional, instructions, tools, special fluid, and so forth. So this is simply a method of identifying what you think may occur and coming up with some preventive issues. They might be preventive, but they also may be the emergency issues that you deal with if it does occur. If a crew member goes overboard, what will be your method of rescue? What will be your boat maneuvers to get back to that person in the water? How will you retrieve them? There have been many cases where the boat has gotten back to the person in the water. They've got a line around him. They start hauling him up into the boat. And for some reason, he slips out of the sling and he's gone. There was one a couple of years ago, just like that, where they had the person, they had their hands on him. They lost him and he was lost, yet never found. So that's my suggestions.
And I appreciate that. It's interesting that you came up with steering as your primary as your biggest problem, because I remember we were just reading the accident report or the incident report of one of the sailboats that was in the Bermuda to Newport race last year or the year before that, and they lost the boat because they lost the rudder mechanism and water started coming into the boat, which kind of makes a compounding. You start with, we have a rudder issue, and then it becomes a flooding issue, and then it becomes an abandoned ship issue. So it's walking its way through your list of problems there.
And when we looked at that photograph that they included in that report, apparently that was a spade rudder that had no skeg or anything in front of it. And the way it was tilted, and for the benefit of our audience, the photograph showed that this was taken from the inside of the boat, and that the rudder post on the inside of the boat was angled forward implying that the rudder itself was hit by an underwater object, which then fractured the hull where the rudder bearings were mounted and pitched the whole thing back underwater but forward inside the boat.
All right, I'm going to pull up some of the questions that have come in. A comment here about pirate risk can be high depending on location. I think the point you were making is that your decision about how to rate something is going to be dependent a lot about your assessment of that issue. And part of that's going to be where am I going to be going and how far am I going to be out and stuff like that. Would you say that's the case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had a lot of reports some years ago about pirate attacks in the Caribbean. You know, there's a lot of concern about that at that time, but that seems to have quieted down for now. But maybe if you're sailing off the Horn of Africa, you might have a totally different perspective on pirates, right?
Well, it's true. But that does bring up the point that sometimes our assessments need to be balanced with additional data. If you hear about 10 reports of piracy in the Caribbean, that sounds like a lot until you think of how many boats there are in the Caribbean. You know, maybe it's not as bad as you think. I got a question. Can we get a list of your emergency events from your Excel sheet to use as a starting point for creating our own lists?
Yeah, well, the e easiest thing, I can send it to you certainly, but the easiest thing is to look through the video on our website, on our
Tom, would it be possible to create that, dump that as a PDF and put it out on the
sure.
ship store? And add it to our ship store. And
Yeah,
that way people can just get it from there.
I can make it available. Sure.
That's all right. We can't sub, 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 sub. And rudder cable issue happened. I have to tell you, I have to tell everybody, hydraulic steering was a bugaboo of mine for literally 2 years. And the problem was I'd get it fixed and it would be working perfectly and then it wasn't. And one of my big things that came out of this for me is I always carried three times as much hydraulic fluid as I would ever need to fill the system because, as Tom says, when you lose steering, that's a major issue. Let's see.
Let me another thought I have on that, just to put a point on hydraulic steering. I personally would not sail a boat with hydraulic steering because I think it has such potential for downsides.
I was a center cockpit, and the type of mechanisms that I'd have to have that actually. And that leads into somebody brought up the idea of having a wind vane as a backup rudder. And that works very well for an aft cockpit boat. It doesn't work very well in a four in a center cockpit boat. So I actually had to have I had an autopilot that I could cut off from the main hydraulics because of that.
Well, and there's another point there that the autopilot is a good backup as long as your rudder itself is not damaged in
And
any way.
that brings up an interesting point, I think. In some cases, when you're looking at mitigation, when you've identified these problems and you're beginning to look at mitigation, there are big picture mitigation, like as you said, getting in there and figuring out where all of the pieces are and what could break and what's corroded. And then there's little picture mitigation. For example, every time we take Navigator to Bermuda, we run a line through the hole in the Island Packet rudder so that if anything happens to the rudder, we can at least keep it with us. I don't know that I have never been able to figure out how that rudder would fall off, but if it did, we can still keep it with us.
Well, the other part of that is that that can be used as a steering method also, because we can take, for the benefit of our audience, that the rudder has, near the top of the rudder, all the way aft, on the aft top corner, there's a hole through the rudder, and we put a rope through that, and we bring those, and we knot it at that point, and then we bring that those ropes, two ends of it, up to our cleats on the stern quarters of the boat. And the purpose originally for that was to stabilize the rudder, immobilize the rudder, in case you're hove to on the sea anchor and have the possibility of drifting astern, and therefore putting reverse pressure on the rudder. That was the original idea, and that's why we put the rope in it. But in addition to that, if you have winches back there in the stern quarters of your boat, you can use that as a steering mechanism also. Now I'm steering directly on the rudder with a rope to two winches on the stern quarter. So it's a direct steering.
I have a question here. Do you have an example of a crew disagreement issue? If so, what was it, and were you able to resolve it? And when I looked at that, my first thought was, then you lead into the crew overboard problem. But
because you're going to pitch somebody overboard,
somebody's going over the side.
Well, believe it or not, a lot of times crew disagreements can arise from meals, meal preparation, meal cleanup, menu. Everybody doesn't like the same menu. So you have to have some advanced knowledge of those things. Plus, usually most people offshore are on their good behavior, but every once in a while you have a troublemaker who is not. And before you go a long distance with somebody offshore, it's a good idea to maybe go short distance with them sailing to know whether you want them on board or not.
Yeah. Years and years ago, I was supposed to do the 1500 ARC from Portsmouth to Tortola. And I needed some extra crew members, and I brought a guy on board who had just the greatest resume. Everything was great. We had to do a 200-mile trip with the crew we had, just to make sure everybody was. By the time we were done, I gave that guy his money back and said, "I'm sorry, we can't have you on board." Just serious clash of personalities there.
Yeah, having the know-it-all is another big problem where somebody wants to be kind of bossy with their shipmates. And yeah. You really have to treat each other with respect, deference, and so forth. And that's one, the guy who's the know-it-all, who's done a lot, maybe, have good skills, but he doesn't have good people skills. And that's a big issue that occurs. But in any event, sailing with somebody in advance of a long distance ocean trip is a good idea.
I've got a comment here. It says, John Kreshmer says the most dangerous item on a boat is an itinerary, and the top three most important safety items are an autopilot, a backup autopilot, and self-steering.
Sounds like John and I agree, huh?
Well, I'm not quite bought into the itinerary idea. That's like saying, well, it's a bad idea for an airplane to leave Washington, D.C. with an itinerary to go to L.A. The idea is not, I'm not going to, is I want to have the ability to bail out if I need to, but if I have to go where I'm going, then I need that itinerary is where I'm going.
Well, John may also be talking about the timing on the itinerary. In other words, the timing issue is a problem because we are very conservative sailors. I'm a very conservative sailor. And if I have the opportunity or the necessity, or I just feel really bad about a storm that might be out there coming and so forth, and I say, no, I must leave now, although I've done that too.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's what John is referring to, the timing more than this finish.
Yeah, what I always heard and what I always lived with was the most dangerous thing on a boat is a calendar. I don't know about an itinerary, but yeah, saying I've got to leave on this day is usually a bad idea. I have a comment that says, captain should have a backup. Having a competent first mate is crucial. No questions there. That is one of the most important things we do when we're setting up the Bermuda trips and the Delmarvas is make sure that the captain has a good mate.
Yeah, and you have to know each other's strengths and weaknesses and so forth, but you definitely have, you need two good hands. You know, the captain and mate have to be able to just take over everything if the rest of the crew kind of fails.
We're back to crew issues there. I've got a comment in here. It says, "Thank you for this discussion. I work on an offshore lighthouse in northern Lake Michigan. We open for the season in less than 2 months. I'm currently working on strategizing with EMS and Coast Guard about emergency medical scenarios requiring response and evacuation. We're going to add Starlink for communication purposes as cell signals at our location are unreliable." I will say that before Suzanne and I started, when we were still years before we started going long distance cruising, Suzanne became a paramedic and I became an EMT specifically because that was one of our biggest issues is medical issues. Now, I don't know how many of the Bermudas we've made that didn't have at least one doctor on board, but we also have a fully stocked medical kit, and we have a dedicated satellite phone to a dedicated emergency support organization with GWU. So that's another one of those that it's looking at what's a possibility, and it's like you said, it could have a low probability but a very high seriousness, and you know. Infection offshore can be that's one of those that can be very serious and more common than you'd like.
Teeth.
Teeth, yeah. Somebody says AED. I do know we carry them. I carried them on my own boat, but I'll be honest, an AED. I'm not completely convinced an AED is a particularly useful tool offshore. It has such a limited use. Advanced medical training above first basic first aid. Like I said, in my case, my mate became a paramedic and went through emergency wilderness training specifically so in situations where you can't just turn the people over to the EMS in 10 minutes. Yeah.
One of the other things related to all of that, you mentioned the sat phone, but is the ability to communicate. And as we do on our offshore boat, we have the sat phone,
Well,
a dedicated sat phone, and we really only use it in case we have to make emergency medical calls. But also having a good email system, because it is a pretty efficient to often to communicate by email with those that you have to communicate with, even on an emergency basis. You can try the single sideband radio, but unless you're really a an expert at that sort of a thing, to me, I'm not very effective using single sideband. But we do have the email and methods of using that. So we use the Iridium Go satellite system to communicate via email. And of course, there are many others also that get more expensive. The Iridium Go is not that expensive to buy the equipment, but it is expensive in terms of the usage charges. But
And we,
in an emergency, that's not a main factor.
yeah, and we do try to minimize its use. Getting up to date weather information, now we have the serious weather on the on our MFD, and then we're also getting weather downloads, and we have a weather router on board or
Right.
ashore.
Yeah, so that brings up the question of storm avoidance. And they're pretty good at the predictions on the major storm routes. I mean, I've been very impressed with what NOAA is able to do in predicting ahead of time where those hurricanes are going to go. The regular storms, have a low pressure system coming through, and you're going to get 50 or 60 knots out of it. You just have to deal with that. But if you have a hurricane, you pretty definitely want to avoid that. And having the good communication, on the forecast for that is, I think, essential.
I'm going to take just a couple more since we're coming up on the quarter hour. The question is, what about an EPIRB?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You want an EPIRB. Now, what some people do is have the EPIRB mounted in a bracket. They can take it, pitch it overboard. It's on a tether. What we do is we have abandoned ship bottles. By bottles, I'm talking about, like 5 gallon size bottle, big red tops on those yellow bottles. And we keep our abandoned ship flares, our emergency flares, and we have two, and one has electronics like the EPIRB and GPS, VHF radio, and all that sort of a thing, batteries, flashlights, and all that sort of thing in the other one. But that's how we handle our EPIRB. We figure if we're going to abandon ship, we don't want to fumble the EPIRB away and have it floating away. So we have a tether on the big bottle that has the EPIRB in it, and a crew member who's tending that bottle has it tied around his wrist so it doesn't depart. If we lose the bottle, we lose the crew member.
And we're back to crew incidents. All right.
Two AEDs.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of AED comments. I'm just gonna this is my thing on AEDs. Yeah, they're good at restarting a heart if it's gone into certain types of problems. I balance that against $1,000 for that piece of equipment. And then the thing is if you're if you have a heart attack halfway through the trip, unless I have a lot of help out there, that's going to be an issue.
So this is where communication comes in, and maybe have the person rescued off the boat.
Yeah, that's one of those where you're looking at how do I get this person off the boat? All right. And that brings us to the end of another episode here. I want to thank everybody for listening and remind you that this will be out on our YouTube channel and it'll be out on our podcast. And we're looking forward to seeing you on the first Tuesday of next month for another one. Yeah. Anything to say, Tom?
No, thank you for attending, everyone, and wish you well.
We'll see you in just a little while, in just another couple of weeks. Goodbye, everybody.
Episode. I'm Captain Frank Mummert with the Maryland School of Sailing and Seamanship. If you'd like to talk to us about what you've discussed today, please feel free to send us an email at office@mdschool.com and put chat in the subject line. If you have an idea for a future discussion, go ahead and send it to us there. And we look forward to hearing from you, and we hope to see you at the school soon. Thanks.